for tuning in and welcome to the Jerry Jones Direct Radio Show, hosted by Jerry Jones. Each and every episode is guaranteed to increase your profits and decrease your stress, so you can enjoy dentistry more than ever before. Welcome to the show.
What has been from a retention standpoint, from, you know, if you can put it in terms of dollars, like if, you know, if you can say I've experienced, you know, once we integrated nutrition and, you know, with maybe bringing on Renee in this case, where you brought her on as a team member, what happened to your numbers? What happened to patient behaviors? I know you've said you had some come back and you know, want to continue to purchase products from you and maintain that relationship. Are there any other sort of, any other things you can identify that you've talked about? It's like, oh, I didn't realize that would happen, or I had no idea that was going to work. And, you know, what's happened?
I'd say the most positive thing that has happened is occasionally patients will leave for whatever reason, their insurance, their spouse wants them to go to their dentist. Maybe they moved a little farther away. Inevitably, a high percentage of them come back to us when they experience another dental office where they're not being listened to. They're always being sold. They're certainly not talking about nutrition. So I think it's nutrition is one piece of it, but it's a big pie, and that's just one piece of it. So I think in that sense of comprehensiveness, they really get that. And they go somewhere else and they don't get that. And the care, you know, not to sit here and brag, but my wife is a hygienist, and I mean, people brag about her all the time. They say, yeah, it's the best cleaning of my teeth I've ever had, most thorough exam, most thorough history. So, I mean, she's very thorough. And I think I'm a fairly good dentist. Yeah, I'm okay. So, you know, we pride ourselves. When I talked about, you know, longevity in terms of oral health, it's one, patients taking accountability. So diet, nutrition, supplementation, good oral hygiene, and then they got to have good dentistry to protect. You can't put bad dentistry in the mouth and expect the patient and then blame it on the patient because it fails. And you can't put a crown in with an open margin and say, oh, well, you just weren't flossing. Well, there's food getting caught in there. Well, it's your fault. So I think when you put all that together, you have a really good result long term. So you can say, well, the problem with that is that I'm not getting a lot of repeat business. I mean, that to me is a sign of success. So when the majority of my patients are coming back for a recare appointment, a lot of them don't need treatment.
Yeah.
Because we've addressed it.
What does majority mean to you? Is that, are you in the 80s, 90%? What have you tracked your retention rate?
I'd say we're probably in the 85, 90%. It's pretty high. Yeah, we have created sort of a niche. And we have patients that come. I had a patient today, she, you know, I forget what the conversation was, but her answer was that's why I drive 2 hours to get here. So she said, yeah. I said, yeah, you know, you probably passed a lot of other dental offices along the way. She says, yeah, I know, but this is where I want to come. So in today's society, when people are looking for convenience, you got to create something different.
Yeah.
We'll drive. I have patients drive 3-4. I have some patients that fly in to see me.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you do for marketing are you actively marketing now, or are you pretty much just relying on word of mouth? What's the marketing engine you're relying on?
Word of mouth, our website. We do some Facebook advertising, of course, social media, and I do some, you know, blogging and some podcasts. So a lot of it's word of mouth, and people are searching. So I think if you put the word out there, they'll find you. But they'll find you if you're different.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if you're like every other dentist, why would they drive 2 hours? Why would they fly in to see you? Yeah. And again, I don't take insurance. So years ago, about 20 years ago, I said, why do patients come to you? Because you're building trust and rapport. You're providing good quality care, and you have a relationship. What I don't want people to come to me for is, one, because I take their insurance. Two, because I'm open 24 hours, 7 days a week. Three, because they can walk across the street to come to my office. Not that I wouldn't take them for that, but
right.
Those all seem to be the wrong reason. So, I mean, you wouldn't even know where my office is if I didn't tell you. There's no sign outside. I'm in a condominium. So, it's all about, well, you need to be on prime real estate. You need to be open 24/7. You need to take all these insurances. I don't know where all that started. You probably know better than me because you've been in that side of it. But, and I don't want to criticize that because there is a market for that. I mean, there are people that does pertain to. I just didn't want to practice that way.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that's bad. It's still serving a population that needs help for sure. Yeah.
Well, I think kind of the cool thing about dentistry is there's about 900 different models of practice. And, it all comes back to what does that doctor really want? Like, what do they want their lifestyle to look like? I've got a great member down in Atlanta, and he's in Sandy Springs outside of Atlanta. And, he's resistant, and I applaud him for it. He's resistant to open up more than 3 days a week. He's resistant to answer the phone after 5 o'clock. And he tells me, he's like, Jerry, that's not what I want. And I'm like, okay, you understand you're missing calls. Yeah, I know I'm missing calls. I don't care. I'm like, okay, as long as you don't care, as long as it's your choice and you're not just ignorant to what's happening. I think that's the beauty of dentistry. And the reason why, I mean, I think, well, I don't know. I don't really know the answer. I mean, you posed a bit of a question there, but I don't know why that has become so common, open 7 days a week, 7 to 7, it's all been done in this guise of consumerism. Consumers want expanded hours. So you got to give them what they want. Well, I mean, last I checked, banks aren't open. Most banks, there might be one bank open on Sundays, but most banks aren't open on Sundays at a branch.
Chick-fil-A is not open on Sunday.
Neither's Hobby Lobby, and there are principles that these businesses have said that match. Now, here's the thing I laugh about. It's, the people that complain are not their customers,
right?
The people that complain about Chick-fil-A are not their customers. The people that bitch, whine, moan, complain about Hobby Lobby are not their customers. And so both of those companies respectively flip everybody off that complains because they're like, hey, you're not giving us money. So shut up. Right. And I think that's a business owner's right. So, I mean, I applaud you for establishing these, some boundaries and knowing what it is you want. Is there a cost to that? Yeah. But I mean, is it a cost you're willing to pay? I had a conversation with another dentist today. She's in, her practice is in Pennsylvania. And we talked a little bit about that. I said, it's okay if that's happening, as long as it's acceptable to you. If it isn't acceptable, then you need to change it. But we were talking about employees, and she had a couple of employees that have been with her 19 years. One of them is behaving badly. And she's, and I'm like, well, are you going to fire her? And she's like, all my consultants tell me to. I'm like, and she's like, but I don't want to. And she had reasons. I said, well, if those reasons are valid to you, then you shouldn't fire her. It's that simple. So, as long as they're acceptable, I think that's smart.
I think it's up to that individual dentist.
Absolutely.
It's good to consult, at least to get some other views, but you don't have to follow that.
No.
And I know that I could, and I've had patients specifically, why can't you open another practice closer to me? if I did that, I'd own 10 practices, but I probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to you right now.
You wouldn't be in one of them.
I'd have a lot more money, but I don't know that I'd be healthier. And to me, my health is more, if I can make a good living, which I have, dentistry has served me well.
Yeah.
And I'm healthy. I'm 66. I'm still robust. I'm still going strong. That's important to me. But I'm not going to criticize someone else who says, I just want to open a bunch of practices. I just want to manage them. Great. Yeah. There's a market for everything.
Absolutely.
I think you got to decide. But if that doesn't serve you long term, then you shouldn't do it.
Right.
I agree with you.
Yeah. And you hit the nail on the head. Is your health worth it? I've been through that ringer, ramped up really big and it's like, this isn't what I want. And then, pull away, get it back down to a manageable size, something that is conducive to a healthy lifestyle. Cause frankly, I don't give a rat's rear end about money. I care about lifestyle. I care about what I'm doing tomorrow. And is it what I want to do? That's what I care about. So, and I think dentists have that prerogative. And I think it's just a matter of taking control and ignoring the noise that's out there that's trying to push them one direction or another.
Yeah, there's a lot of noise for sure.
Oh my God, and it's getting worse. Yeah. I know we're at I can't believe an hour went by so quickly.
I think we could keep talking too. So,
well, I do have other questions. you just give me the hey, I gotta go, and we'll wrap it up. But I imagine our listeners are getting some value out of this, because I think oftentimes they don't hear your voice coming through, that voice of hey, you can do what you can practice how you want. Still, there's still room for that. Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned speaking, and your book has gotten you some speaking gigs, and you give public talks about sleep, for example. Are those local talks? And if they are local, how does that come back and feed your practice? What does that look like? I mean, because to me, it's like, it's marketing, it's media. You know, speaking is a form of media. And so how does that work for you, and what does it look like?
Well, first, I take the approach that I'm not doing it as a marketing thing. Although you know it is. I can't fool you. I really do it because I feel a strong passion to get the word out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about educating. And I think if you have that first in mind, same as treating patients first, not focusing on the money will come. So focusing on educating, getting the word out to the community about the importance of sleep, how we can affect and help your children who have sleep disordered breathing or have ADD or ADHD, you know, all these childhood illnesses that might be related to their poor sleeping.
Yeah.
I just want to get the word out. Now, if they come to me, great. If they don't, that's okay too. But you do end up getting people that come to you because of that. People tend to trust you. Two things. One, when you speak, and when you have a book.
Yeah.
You're the expert. You may not be an expert, but they see you as an expert. I know you understand that concept completely.
Yeah, I think that's really important for docs to understand, because you don't need to be on a national stage for, you know, just take advantage of those things. You can be at a Lions meeting, you know, Lions Club meeting. You can be at a Kiwanis Club meeting. You can put on your own show. I mean, a lot of docs, you know, they're doing their own events, small 5 to 10 person events, and they're very, very profitable. But you're right. You hit the nail on the head. Again, we didn't talk about this in advance, but I mean, authorship equals authority, celebrity, and exclusivity. It's the ACE principle. My friend Matt Zagula sort of coined that terminology.
But I like that.
It's exactly why I think every dentist who wants a practice like yours, that is not a drill, fill, bill, mill, you know, where it's like, hey, I'm the dentist, and I'm going to spend an hour with this patient. Why? Because I want to, and because I want this individual to understand that I really do care about them, and I'm going to show them through action. It gives doctors, you know, that confidence that they can do that, hearing from you. And then I think if you want that type of business, you have to be willing to do the type of marketing that it takes to build that kind of practice. And I think, you know, an hour with a patient on the phone in advance of an appointment is part of the marketing process. You know, that is absolutely part of the deal. It's part of the selling process. So, so I think, you know, you've established some really good principles.
Yeah, probably. I just look at it as any other business, a lost leader. I mean, it's not that moment in time is not profitable. My time consulting with the patient, I'm not making my regular hourly fee. But on the other end of that, I might be selling a big case. So you got to be willing to do that.
Right.
And if you're not, you're going to be doing those onesies and twosies, you know, filling here or crown there. And I think that for me, the most frustrating thing is to do that crown and you look in the mouth and you go, what did I just do? Did I really help this patient? Their teeth are crowded. They have poor occlusion. They have TMJ issues. They can't open wide. And did we fix the problem? Yeah, we maybe immediately, but we didn't really get to the root of this. And the patient may not be interested in that, but you got to give them the opportunity to make that choice. If they're not informed and given the opportunity, how do they know to make that choice? They're not going to say, you know what? I don't think we should crown this tooth. I think we should just rehab my whole mouth. And here's $50,000. What do you think? That's not going to happen.
No.
We all wish that would. Right. It doesn't happen.
Make life easy. but that's not the case. Yeah, that just doesn't happen. I think oftentimes, you know, the expectations are a little too high for a 10-minute talk. They think they're going to, you know, talk somebody into some big case, and that just doesn't happen. How did you get your team on board? Because I can see this I can see what you do is enviable to many because of what it is and the pace at which you are able to do it. The fact that you don't take insurance. How did you get your team on board? Is it a long-term process? Did you select the right team members to begin with? Because, I mean, you know, absent everything else, the team is something that can ruin a practice.
Absolutely. Yeah.
This style that you want to have, a team can ruin it, you know, and it takes one strong-headed individual woman, you know, who can blow it all up. And that's not, I'm not being disparaging. That's just reality. Women are very strong and they are very powerful when it comes to saying, you know, to moving individuals, you know, in a certain direction. So, I mean, it's a force you have to understand and sort of, you know, be ready to work with.
I think you have to face it head on and don't ignore those issues because they're going to come up. Mm-hmm. And you got to constantly reinforce what your mission is, what you're passionate about. I mean, I'm the leader of that, so I get to make the decisions. So right or wrong, and it's fine as a team member, if you don't agree, that's fine. I'm going to hear you out, but I got to make the ultimate decision. And a lot of that decision is based on what my passion is and what the mission of the practice is. So if this doesn't fit with the mission and you can't go along with it, again, just like with the patient, this may not be the right fit. So some of those you find right away, they're just A plus, you know, you're like, man, we hit it. Others you can nurture and others, it doesn't matter. You got to let them go and, you know, have a good life, but this is not the right place for you. Because you're disruptive. You're creating this sort of cancer or virus in the practice. We can't have that. I mean, we stand for something. We're here to help patients. That's our primary goal. And if you don't understand that, this is not about you. Not about what's going on outside the office. Not that I'm saying we don't want to help you or understand that, but when you're here, we're here to help the patient. And you got to be on board with that 100%. There's no exception to that.
Yeah. You guys spend a lot of time training.
Yeah, we do outside training. We do regular meetings in the office. Mm-hmm. We have a morning. We start every day with a morning huddle. Mm-hmm. So we go over all the cases. We talk about the patients. And when everyone has something different to offer, that I think is helpful. So we have a better understanding. So we really, you know, we're not just like walking in the office and jumping, you know, right into the first patient. Like, who are you? You know, so we want to know who they are, what, you know, what idiosyncrasies have come in that we need to discuss. What's special about that person? Is it the person's birthday? Did they have a recent family member pass away? It's all these things that we need to know. And someone may know that, but not everyone knows it. So it's an opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
And then at the weekly meetings, lunch meetings, we talk about what's new, where are we going, where are we heading, what went good, what went bad, you know, and where do we want to go, say, for this year or this month. So it's constantly, and then we do some outside training based on, well, most of it's been on sleep for the last year, so centered around that.
So you'd say you probably are spending, I mean, given morning huddles, how long do those typically last for you?
15, 20 minutes.
Okay, so 15 minutes a day. How many days a week? Three, four?
4 days, every day.
Okay, yep. Right. So that's an hour a week just in morning huddles, and then you're spending an hour or a half an hour at a lunch meeting once a week.
It's an hour up to an hour and 20 minutes.
Okay, so you're putting in a couple hours of training every week. Sadly, most dental practices don't put 10 minutes of training in every week, you know, and they don't do morning huddles, even though most dentists know that's a great way to start the day and they should be starting the day that way. I mean, and then you've got outside training to layer onto that. I think that, you know, that in and of itself helps everyone make sure that they're on board with your mission. And if they're not, like you said, you free up their future, and the faster you learn they're not a fit, the better, right? Send them down the road.
Hard feelings, but you know, we can't be going in four different directions. You know, this staff member thinks it should be this, like this one thinks it's that. I mean, we have to come to, you know, an agreement so that we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
We can't be speaking four different languages to pay. Then patients get very confused. They're like, wow, he said this and she said that. They don't, you know, and then you said something different. So I think that's one of the primary reasons that I think your listeners need to pay attention to this is that why don't patients move forward? Because they're confused sometimes. They might say, I got to speak to my spouse. They might say, right now I have to replace my hot water heater. Or they might say, is my insurance going to cover it? Whatever it may be, that's an excuse to get out of it. But the real reason, they don't understand what you just said. And did everyone on board agree with that? So that they, confusion this creates. I mean, if I'm buying something and I'm not really sure about what I'm buying, I'm not going to buy it.
No. Confusion, yeah, it's an almost instant no if you lose somebody along the way. And there's a surprising amount of undermining that goes on in dental practices. That this came up in a conversation with another dentist today. She's got a staff member that is undermining, the hygiene department and what the hygiene team is trying to do. And there's a DA that's undermining them. So, that happens a lot. And I think a lot of times dentists just aren't aware of it. And it's paying attention, making sure that the people that are with you on that journey that are aligned with your vision, that they support what it is you're trying to accomplish. So,
I think you can't be afraid to address it. I mean, if you let it go, it's an old saying, you can handle it with a velvet fist instead of an iron hammer. if you ignore it and think it's going to go away, it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, it only gets worse. It only gets worse. Last question. Where do you see, or what do you see rather, happening to dentistry in the next 5 years from a clinical standpoint? What kind of grand thing do you see happening?
Well, that's a good question, because there's a lot certainly happening transition-wise in terms of a lot more corporate practices opening up. Young dentists coming out of school, with heavy debt, and not just the school loan. Now, you probably know better. I don't even know, because I haven't done it so long. It's probably about $500,000 to open up a decent-sized practice. I don't know how you do that. So where do they got? Where are they going to go? They're going to go to these corporate practices. And again, I'm not criticizing them. They're serving a certain population. The problem with those dentists, how do they ever establish value for themselves? How do you break away from that and say, hey, I've had enough. I'm important. I'm worth more than $15 or $50, whatever someone wants to pay me for a filling, and find a way to do that financially. Mm-hmm. So I think there's going to be sort of a split. I think the corporate thing's going to keep increasing simply because there's a market for it, and they can throw a lot more dollars at it. Mm-hmm. I think solo practitioners, it's getting harder and harder. I have a conversation with you where I am because I've been practicing almost 40 years.
Right.
If I just came out of school, I may not have that same conversation, like hour and a half for phone call, hour and a half for consultation. It might be look a little different. So
yeah. Well, context matters, right? I mean, so you've got a heck of a jump start, but the odds, the other part of it is the odds of a young dentist having your knowledge base to be able to do what you do is zero. Right. It's not going to happen. I don't care how smart they are or how smart they think they are. You don't get 40 years of knowledge in 3 years or 4 years of dental school, depending on how fast you sped through it. So, you have designed your life to get where you are intentionally. And I think, any dentist who wants to intentionally design that life, it's possible for them. They've got to be willing to do the hard work. And sometimes that hard work is saying no to every little purchase they think they want. I want a house, I want a car, I want a practice. Well, pick one, what's going to be? You can't have all of them right out of school.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would strongly discourage buying things that's going to put you heavily into debt, And as there are a lot of things that you can practice without. I mean, having a 3D comb beam, that's a heavy investment. I paid $160,000. But I could do it, I think the first piece of equipment I actually financed. I usually don't buy something unless I can pay for it.
Yeah.
But I saw the value it brought to the practice in terms of being able to diagnose more, which then meant educating patients more and treating things that we couldn't treat before. Right. But that's not viable for many dentists. So I hear
they don't have
a Panorex
either, right? I mean, they'd look at the same x-ray that you're looking at and they're not seeing what you're seeing. So it doesn't bring value to them until they've got that experience set to extract the value out of that big investment. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
So I think there's probably a little bit of fear, I would think, coming out of school.
Yeah.
I hear that from some of the young associates.
Yeah. Well, let's wrap this up because I've kept you far longer than I said I would. And you've just been an absolute peach. And I've enjoyed our conversation so much. I know our listeners are already excited about this. So, you know, if somebody has a question about what you're doing, how you're doing it, or if they want to reach out and maybe have you speak at their dental society meetings or maybe this somehow this gets into the hands of somebody that's local to you and they want you to come speak about sleep to their group, how would they get in touch with you?
Just email me. I do look at my email every day.
I can attest to that, folks. He does.
That's right. I'm responding to you. So it's D as in David, R as in Robert, Sam, S-A-M, at Julian, C-T-R, which is abbreviation for center, .com. So D-R, Sam, at JulianCTR.com.
Got it.
Dr. Send me an email. I'll respond. You know, I would love to kind of share that. I mean, also, if anyone calls me, I'm gonna pick their brain too. I want to know what they're doing.
Yeah, smart.
I mean, when we get off of this, I'm gonna take my scrubs off, get dressed, get in my car. I'm driving up to New York for a training session tomorrow on sleep apnea.
Perfect. So
it never stops. I mean, that's the other thing. You got to keep educating yourself.
Yeah.
My first partner, Jerry, you'll find this interesting. My first partner, which goes back almost 40 years ago, he one day said to me, he said, you know, I feel like I already know everything I need to know from what I learned in dental school. And I'm going to take the bare minimum CE. That's it. You know, in the state of Maryland, it's 30 CE credits every 2 years. I mean, I don't renew till next year and I'm already over 250. So you never stop learning.
Right.
So if you think you know it all, and that, you know, that applies in any profession, you know, once you think you know it all, I think you're dead in the water.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I agree. I spend a fortune on my own education every year and it never stops. And it's what keeps me going and interested and enjoying what it is I do. So yeah, I think you're
I can tell that. Yeah.
I do. I have a great time. Well, Dr. Sam, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And if our listeners have questions, reach out. It's Dr. Sam at JulianCTR.com. Sorry, JulianCTR.com. Dr. Sam at, that's the backwards way to do it. So make sure you put it in the right order. Otherwise,
yes, com.ctrtc.
Yeah, you can really confuse them.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for me too. Thank you. You know, I think we just sort of connected right away. I think we could talk for hours.
Well, I have no doubt we could keep going. Well, you know what? We'll have you back on. How about that?
Be great.
The break, and we'll have you back on. Let's see what you're doing in another 6 months or a year or so.
It'll be something different.
Perfect. I love it.
Thanks for tuning in and welcome to the Jerry Jones Direct Radio Show, hosted by Jerry Jones. Each and every episode is guaranteed to increase your profits and decrease your stress so you can enjoy dentistry more than ever before. Welcome to the show.